So we can just start now. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. Today, the sutta that we are going to read is this Kuntaliya Sutta that is from the Samyutta, the Bhojanga Suttas, and this is the seven factors of enlightenment. The Buddha's program that this is the seven treasures of the Tathagata. So why is this? They call this seven factors of enlightenment because you develop these factors that lead you to enlightenment. And I choose this because this sutta is very interesting. Lots of people, when you read this seven factors of enlightenment, and you start with the four foundations of mindfulness, then investigation of the Dhamma and piti, sukha, and then energy, tranquility, then you have this stillness, and then you have this upekkha, you know, equanimity. But this sutta is very interesting. They really go back to the basic, actually, that we have to develop certain things before we can start develop these four foundations of mindfulness. And a lot of people tend to overlook and neglect that what we need to develop. And because sometimes we need to develop that in order to develop that. That is a causes of sequence. So it's important that we always go back to the basic. If we can't even practice the basic, and we can't really jump the queue, you know, for example, you build something, you need to have the preparations, you know, you need to have the preliminary work. Like you build a house, you know, you build a building, you need to clear the land, you know, you need to set the foundation, but not to straight away to go into, you know, all the profound stuff, but a lot of others, you know, we need to go back to the basic. What are the really fundamental and essential we need to develop first before we go further? And this is very interesting. These are Kuntaliya Suttas. So I will start reading these suttas, and after I finish, then I will start to explain these suttas. And if there's any question, please put up your hand and ask. And this Kuntaliya Suttas in this Bhojanga, for this some from the Samyutta Nikaya Bhojanga Suttas, and for the sixth, that is the sixth Kuntaliya Suttas. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Saketa in the deer park at Anjana Grove. Then the wanderer Kuntaliya approached the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, he sat down to one side and said to the Blessed One, "Master Gotama." So he's still not the disciples of the Buddha. That's why he addressed the Buddha as Master Gotama. "I am one who stay around monastic parks and frequents assemblies. After the meal, when I have finished my breakfast, it is my custom to roam and wander from park to park, from garden to garden. There I see some ascetics, Brahmins, engaged in discussions of the benefit of rescuing their own theses in debate and condemning the theses of others. But what is the benefit that Master Gotami lives for? Kuntaliya, the Tathagata lives for the benefits and fruits of true knowledge and liberations. True knowledge and liberations here, that is the wisdom, and liberation, that is the enlightenment. But Master Gotama, what things when developed and cultivated fulfill the true knowledge and liberation? The seven factors of enlightenment, Kuntaliya, when developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and liberation. But Master Gotama, what things when developed and cultivated fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment? the four establishment of mindfulness, that is the four foundations of mindfulness. Kundalini, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. But Master Gotama, what things, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the four establishment of mindfulness? The three kinds of good conduct, Kundalini, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the four establishments of mindfulness. But Master Gotama, what things, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the three kinds of good conduct? Restraints of the senses, the sense faculties, that is the restraint of the senses. Kundalini, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the three kinds of good conduct. And as you can see, when he's come to here, the Buddha stopped Kundalini to ask further. So he stopped from here, he said, and he started to ask the Kundalini, you know, ask him. So come to this restraint of our senses, and Buddha started to ask Kundalini, and how Kundalini is restraints of senses faculties developed and cultivated so that it fulfilled the three kinds of good conducts. Here, Kundalini, having seen an agreeable form with the eye, a bhikkhu does not long for it, or become excited by it, or generate lust for it. His body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. But having seen a disagreeable form with the eyes, he is not dismayed by it, not bonded, not dejected. Without ill will, his body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and now liberated. Further, Kundalini, having heard an agreeable sound with the ear, having smelled an agreeable audio with the nose, having surveyed an agreeable taste with the tongue, has felt an agreeable tactile object with the body, having cognized an agreeable mental phenomenon with the mind, the bhikkhu does not long for it, or becomes excited by it, or generate lust for it. But having cognized a disagreeable mental phenomenon with the mind, he is not dismayed by it, or not daunted, not dejected. Without ill will, his body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. So when in Kundalini, after he has seen a form with the eyes, a bhikkhu body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated in regard to both agreeable and disagreeable form. When after he has heard a sound with the ear, smell, audio with the nose, severe taste with tongue, felt a tactile object with the body, cognized mental phenomena with the mind, a bhikkhu's body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated in regard to both agreeable and disagreeable mental phenomena, then his restraint of the sense faculties have been developed and cultivated in such a way that it fulfilled the three kinds of good conduct. So I stop here. I just start to explain about this the restraint. So when the Buddha said, when the restraints come, when we heard something, this is how the mind, the something that we like. So then we arise this attachment, greed. So we want more. So that's lust for it. Then something that we don't like, then we try to push it away, that the evil arises. Then this is where we restrain our senses. But restraining the senses doesn't mean that no seeing, no touching, no hearing, or no smelling. It's not about that. It's where the restraint comes in, is where we have the contact, where the defilements arises. And one of the example, very good example, that when Achancha when he was still a novice monk. So he determined that he made a resolution that he's not going to look at, because he had a lot of problems with his lust when Achancha, when he was a novice, when he was young. So he had a lot of problems with lust. So he made a determination that, you know, during the 3 months retreat, I'm not to look at a female body. So he restrained himself. Within 3 months, he didn't look at any female's body. So after the 3 months, then because he's finished his determination, and the first lady that he looked at when he had the contact, immediately he was overcome by the lust. Then he realized that actually it's not, you know, not seeing, not hearing, you know, we cut ourselves off, you know, because we can. We live in this world. We have to interact, you know, we have contact. So we can't cut ourselves off. And that is where the practice of restraint. There's actually the restraint needs lots of mindfulness to be able to aware what's happening to the mind, what's happening now, what's happening, you know, in the mind, what arises. You need lots of stillness, you know, mindfulness to be able to have that, to be able to notice that, to be able to catch it, to know that this is coming. You know, when I see a pretty girl, something good, that is, I have craving. And you have the mindfulness aware of that. Then where this is the right efforts coming. So we stop, restrain the mind. The more we can restrain our mind, that is where we strengthen our mind. Our mind becomes stronger. So because if we not be able to restrain our mind, you know, the senses, if we give in to the defilements, then these defilements become stronger. And then the defilements overcome our mind. And we always been, you know, get caught, you know, and carry away by the defilements, overcome by the defilements. That's why this is where the restraint comes from. And also another good example, that is in this one of the, I read one of these Theragathas, and one of the monks that is the enlightened monks, before he's enlightened, he used to practice this asupa practice, you know, you contemplate of the, you know, the filthiness, you know, the foulness of the body. So he used to go to the charnel grounds to look at those dead body, the dead body that is, you know, how is, you know, disintegrate, you know, this started to bloated and, you know, looks ugly and, you know, oozing, you know, with the body. So he used to go and contemplate and do this mindfulness on this foreignness of the body, this asupa practice. And one day he's doing that, and he was contemplating and looking at the female body. It's already dead, it's a corpse, a female corpse that is already started smelling and oozing and bloated. It's terrible. And that moment that he had this lust aroused in him, and he was really shocked by that, like, how come I, you know, with this, you know, disgusting body, and yet I still have the lust, you know, aroused in me, you know. And actually that moment when he see that, and actually he got enlightened, because he realized that the insight, that actually is not something outside there is a problem. Sometimes you think that the object is the problem, but actually it's not the object is the problem. It's what arises between ourselves and the object, arises in our mind. That is the problem that we arise at, the defilements. And then that is we because of our, we either the Buddha said, you know, this is the cause of the suffering, if this, the craving. The three types of craving, the craving for sensual pleasure, you know, the senses, the things that we like, and then craving to be and craving not to be. And it's very subtle. And that is where the attachment, you know, arises. And that's the time that we'll be able to, you know, to be aware, awake to it. That is where the right effort comes in. The restraint come in. Actually, restraint is not suppressing. A lot of people they misunderstand. They actually they sometimes actually restraint have to have accompanied by the wisdom, with the mindfulness. You are awake. You have the clear comprehension. You know what's going on. You know that this will lead you to unwholesome deeds. You know that in the moment, that is, you have the awareness, clear comprehension. It's not that you try to suppress. It's not that, when sometimes people tend to mix up that suppression and restraint with the clear comprehension and awareness is different. Because suppressing is like, the farmers come out, okay, I'm not going to look at it. You just try to use the willpower to push it down. So when we push it down, actually we are not working with what's happening right now. We're not with the clear comprehension, not with that non-reactive awareness, like knowing this happening. And this is the third foundation of mindfulness, actually, that you be able to hold yourself to aware that this is coming. And you are not reacting to whatever emotion come up, or anger, or lust, greed, you'll be able to stay. Actually, this is really called restraint, but not by pushing it away. If we push it away, we suppress it, actually we are reinforced the tendency. Actually, the defilements become stronger. So next time, and then we become a habit. You know, we either run away, pretend that it's not there, or it's too difficult, I'm not going to deal with it, you know. I'm not going to look at it, I push it away. And after a while, you become a happy Tibetan. You keep doing that. Whatever things that you don't like to look at, you don't want to deal with, you push it away. And the more we do it, we're really good at it. It's become a happy Tibetan, the mental happy pattern. Then you keep doing that. Then the defilements become stronger. They say it's important that we always come back to the basic. They say it's interesting that the Buddha said that you start with the restraint. That is a very basic. It seems like very basic, but it's, you know, require lots of, you know, that you need to have this mindfulness, calmness, and effort. That is in the Samadhi group. That is the whole path of this Noble Four Path. That is a Sila. Samadhi Panya. In this Samadhi group, that is the cultivation of the mind. Not only meditation itself is only one factor, you know, the stillness is one factor, but you need to have mindfulness, stillness, and this right effort. So this right restraint, you have this, actually is accompanied by wisdom. You need to have the wisdom. That's why it's important that we always, you know, to come back to the basic, what are the things that we really need to develop? And it's nice to listen to all that, it sounds profound, you know, it's nice, you know, come to the purifications, you know, a deep stuff. But if we can't do the basic, we can't go to the deeper, you know, level, you know, of the practice, because it's essential. We need to develop this in order to develop that. And that's why after the Buddha continued to say, and how, Kundalini, are the three kinds of good conduct developed and cultivated so that they fulfill the four establishments of mindfulness? That is that because we be able to restrain our bodily, so our speech and our mind, then this is how we fulfill, we develop these three good conducts, you know, from our bodily actions, our speech, our mind. So then when we develop the restraint, when we have this restraint, that's why we fulfill these three good conducts, then actually that's why we have this purity of our sila. You see, then it's come to the sila, then your morality. That's why the perfection of our bodily speech and mind actually is the foundation for the peaceful mind. So before we can have the peaceful mind, we need to have the morality. So the restraint, we fulfill the restraint, we develop that, we fulfill the three good conducts. That is our bodily, speech and mind. That's why I remember many years ago, someone asked Pao Saido a question. He said that, you know, How do we know, like, sometimes that people attain jhana, like have deep absorption? So when you attain jhana, you need to temporarily abandon or suppress the five hindrances. The five hindrances, that is the desires, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and doubt. And that's why you have to purify your mind in order to attain that absorption. So that's why the outsider say, if someone like they don't have the misbehave, they don't have the purity in their good, they don't have these three good conducts, bodily, speech, or mind, and they're really coarse, you know, and they come and tell me that, oh, I'm a tinjana, I have this limit, I have that. He said it's impossible that person can attain this state, this absorption, because you need to have the purity of mind in order to reach this absorption, this deep meditation, the deep, you know, state of mind. So he said it's impossible. That's why it's important that how we need to purify the morality. That's why a lot of people tend to overlook and neglect that the importance of this morality, the basic. We have to start with the basic, restrain. And even with the restraint, with the morality, it also need lots of, you know, you still need to have the mindfulness, the stillness, and also the effort. That is a cultivation of the mind. That's why, if this is how you can see, you have to develop this in order to develop that. If you can't develop this, you can't develop that. They said now you have the three good conducts. When you develop this, then you'll be able to fulfill. Then only you come to the four foundations of mindfulness. Then you can really see how the sequence, you know. Then you have this. That's why in the Satipatthana Suttas, the Buddha said, oh, you practice, you know, mindfulness, four foundations of mindfulness. Actually, these four foundations of mindfulness is not those like the superficial type of, you know, I'm lifting, seeing. Not that kind, that is really, that mindfulness is really super duper strong mindfulness. You already be able to suppress that, you know, the five hindrances, because the five hindrances is the one who clouds our mind. And I remember one lady came to stay in our monastery, and she said that she planned to stay for 2 weeks because she read the suttas. The Buddha said, you know, you practice foundation of mindfulness, 7 days you'll be enlightened. So she thought that she spent 2 weeks in our monastery, she'll be at least become a sotapanna within 2 weeks. You know, and actually a lot more, you know, than that, you know. And she said, oh, I thought that I can become a sotapanna after 2 weeks. She planned to stay for 2 weeks, and then she go back a sotapanna, then she solve her problem. So that is how, you know, you can see the sequence. You develop that, then the four foundation of mindfulness, then if you can develop the four foundations of mindfulness, and how Kundalini, the four establishment of mindfulness, develop and cultivate so that they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. Here, Kundalini, a bhikkhu, dwell contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, mind in mind, phenomena in phenomena, ardent clearly, comprehending and mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. It is in this way that the four establishment of mindfulness are developed and cultivated so that they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. And how, Kuntalaya, the seven factors of enlightenment develop and cultivate us so that they fulfill true knowledge and liberations. Here, Kuntalaya, a bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factors of mindfulness. It's based upon seclusion, dispassion, cessation, maturing in release. He develops the enlightenment factor of equanimity. which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. It is in this way that the seven factors of enlightenment are developed and cultivated so that they fulfill true knowledge and liberation. When this was said, the wanderer Kundalini said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent Master Gautami, Magnificent Master Gautama, the Dharma has been made clear in many ways by Master Gautama." You see, because we have a sister Gautami, so Gautami, as though he were turning upright what has been turned upside down, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go for refuge to Master Gautama and to the Dharma and to the Bhikkhu Sangha. From today, let Master Gautama remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. So as we can see that how it's important that we have to start from the morality. And there's other suttas that also related, you know, connected to this sutta that is in the Anguttara Nikaya, that is the regarding the benefit of the keeping the precepts, the virtue of being a virtuous person. That's how we can see that the Buddha's teaching, that's the Buddha's teaching of non-self. Like things, everything's happened, you know. It's not that, we can't control. And it's according to the causes and conditions. It arises out of condition. So that we put in the conditions. When we started to practice, the Buddha's in one of the suttas, the Buddha's mentioned that he said cultivating these seven factors of enlightenment. It's just like the simile, like the hands, you know, the hand sitting on the eggs. So you sit long enough, the eggs will hatch itself. The hands do not need to set may my eggs hatch. Whether you want it or not, the enlightenment is going to happen. If we practice, you know, according, you know, to the take up the whole path of practice, start from the basics, you know, keeping the follow the whole path of practice, that is the sila, samadhi, apanya, and it's happened. We can't use willpower to make it happen, to make it happen quicker or earlier. We can. If we can use our willpower, if we can control, then the Buddha's teaching of non-self is not the truth anymore, if we can control. But we need to keep practicing. And practicing and keep putting develop the quality, to develop the quality. And the whole, you know, it's happened by itself. You know, you develop this, and you lead to this. You develop this, you lead to this. And this is in in this Anguttara Nikaya. That is the benefit of the virtues. That is connected with these suttas. Forgotten to mark it. What page already? I'm looking at the page. Huh? Okay. Yes. That is the benefit of virtues. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Savatthi in Jeta Grove, Anathapindika Monastery. At that time, the Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him and asked, "What, Lord, is the benefit of virtuous way of conduct? What is the reward?" Then the Buddha answered, "Non-remorse, Ananda, is the benefit and reward of virtuous way of conduct. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of non-remorse? Gladness, Ananda. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of gladness? Joy. And what, Lord, the benefit and reward of joy? Serenity. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of serenity? Happiness. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of happiness? Concentration of the mind. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of concentration? Knowledge and visions of things as they really are. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of knowledge and visions of things as they really are? Revulsion and dispassion. And what, Lord, is the benefit and reward of revulsion and dispassion? The knowledge and visions of liberation. Hence, Ananda, virtuous way of conducts have non-remorse as the benefit and reward. And non-remorse has gladness as its benefits and reward. Gladness has joy as benefit and reward. Joy has serenity as its benefit and reward. Serenity has happiness as its benefit and reward. Happiness has concentration as its benefit and reward. Concentration as knowledge and visions of things as they really are as its benefits and reward. Knowledge and visions of things as they really are has revulsions and dispassions as its benefit and reward. Revulsions and dispassions have knowledge and visions of liberations as the benefit and reward. In this way, Ananda, virtuous way of conduct, lead step by step to the highest. And as you can see, when we live a good life, we live a virtuous life. So we have this non-remorse because we have not done anything, caused any harm or hurts to others. We feel good about ourselves. You have this non-remorse. We feel a sense of, you know, trust and confidence in ourselves and good about ourselves. Then we have this non-remorse. Then you feel good. Then you have this gladness. Because of this gladness, as you can see, it's related to the seven factors of enlightenment. When you have this gladness, then you have this joy. You feel happy. And when you feel happy, your mind, you have this tranquility of the body and mind. When you have this tranquility, you feel you're happy. You have your happiness. When you have the happiness, then you have this concentration of the mind. That's why the concentration of the mind, the development of the attainments of the wisdom and enlightenment actually based on the development of happiness. As you can see, the happiness is always come first. You know? You always have to have the happiness come first before you have the peaceful mind. That's why, as you can see, this whole path of practice, the Buddhist path of practice actually is a path to happiness. It's a liberation. It leads us to real happiness. That's why you can always see that, you know, always the happiness comes first. They said that in a lot of them, it's in this discourses the Buddhist, you know, gave. It's mentioned again and again and again. The Buddhist indicated, you know, developed this wisdom and attainment of the enlightenment. Enlightenment actually is depending on development of happiness. They say it's important. They say it's step by step. You leading, you know, it's naturally. We don't have to wish that may I be happy. If we live a virtuous life, we naturally happy. If as we purify our mind, we naturally kind. You know, it's come naturally. We don't have to wish. And then we don't have to, you know, whether we want it or not, it's happened naturally. It's just because one thing leading to another. That is, you know, this depends on this. Because of this, give rise to this. You need to have this in order to develop this. There is the sequence. And this is the same. That is how you're leading to enlightenment. That's right. So when we have this happiness, then our minds, you have the stillness. Then when we have the stillness, that is that we abandon, you know, these five hindrances, because these five hindrances clouded the mind. The reason why we've been trapped in the samsara, again and again we've been rebirth, you know, reborn again and again, because of we have this distorted view. That is the first, the dependence originations, the avijja, ignorant. The ignorant, because of ignorant itself had its conditions, the conditions that is distorted view. we have distorted view because of the five hindrances, the mind being clouded. We can't see things as they really are. So when we have the stillness, because we have temporarily abandoned or suppressed, or like Arahant, the permanently, you know, they abandon the five hindrances, so they can see things as they really are. Then where the insights arouse, you know, that is the insight, the wisdom arise. That is where, that's why we need to have the calmness, the stillness. Then we can see things as they really are. When we can see things as they really are, then we have these revulsions and dispassion. Then we no longer, you know, the mind being pushing or grasping or holding on to things. So the Buddha said it always one way or another. We either craving to be or craving not to be. You know, things that we like, we hold on, you know, we try to make it stay, the things that we like. Things that we don't like, we push it away. That is also craving, but craving not to be. So we either one way or another. Like some people, why? You know, that because like ordinary people, if they don't understand, they can't find the middle way. Like we either craving to be exist or craving not to be exist. You know, then we have this, you know, keep again and again we come back. And that craving not to be, and you just annihilation. Like there's like some people that they find nowhere, they have so much suffering, they don't want to be exist anymore. Then they commit the suicide, they kill themselves. But that is another way. That is a middle way, the Buddha, there is a way out. They said the Buddha said there is a way out. That is to cultivate, to develop the whole path of practice, that is the Noble Eightfold Path. That is a way out. But a lot of people, if they decide, the Buddha said, whatever religion, you know, they have this Noble Eightfold Path. So we can, you know, that is enlightenment. You be able to attain enlightenment. It doesn't matter what religion, as long as this they have this Noble Eightfold Path. This whole path of this is the way leading to ending of suffering. So that's why you can, and as you can really see that how, and the Buddha's teaching, like, you know, one this is the cause and effect, like that is non-self, and also you can see, you know, from all these suttas that the consistency, like from these suttas, they always can link to the other and they are connected. You know, that always, if it's not the truth, and sometimes you don't add up, you know. On one hand, you said this, and this doesn't, you know, in other discourse, you can't link up, and it's not, it's like, can't add up, you know. But you can see, you know, all the Buddha's teaching, the consistency, whatever you can, it's linked up, you know. It's not that, you know, contradict with each other, no. As you can see, even in this sutta, say, you know, when the Buddha talk about we come back to the basic, live a virtuous life, and how it's leading to enlightenment. And in the other discourses, you know, the Buddha teach about the seven factors of enlightenment, and also, you know, you can, it's interconnected, you can link. It's not that, you know, like contradict with each other, no. This is, you can see, that's why I find that the reason why I choose this, I find that it's very important that we always go back to the basic. It's important. And because we still have a little bit of time, I can give you an overview of one of these, maybe you go back, you can read this, that is in the Majjhima Nikaya. That is the Relate Chariots. That is Sutta 24. And in these suttas, the Buddhas talk about the whole path of purification. And as you can see that a lot of people, they said that, oh, all religion is the same. Actually, it's not the same. Like, we do have the common ground, like being a good person, being a peaceful person. Like, for example, like meditation. It's not only exclusively that's Buddhist meditate. And other religion, you know, that teach meditation too. So in these suttas, it's not only being a good person, it's not good enough, but it's essential. we need that is you need to have you need to be the to have to that is morality. Then cultivation of the calm mind, you need to have the morality. Then the first two, you know, this I can just give you an overview of these suttas that Suttas 24. Okay. Yes, the relate chariots. I just read that part that when this Sariputta he met the Bhikkhu Puna. That he's an arahant, and he met him and he went to him. The Buddha went to this Venerable Puna, and he asked him. He started to ask his ask this he's an arahant, this a monk, and he said he asked the first thing he met him. He asked, "Is the holy life lived under our blessed one, friend?" "Yes, but friend, it is for the sake of purifications of virtue that the holy life is lived under the blessed one." It means that to you live this holy life is just for the sake of just being virtuous, you know, to be a good person. Then this Venerable Puna said, "No, you know, this the holy life is not for the sake of purifications of virtue." Then he continued to ask, "Then is it for the sake of purifications of the mind that the holy light is lived under the blessed one?" Then this Bunyan answered, "No." He said, "Is it to have a calm mind? You know, you live this holy life is to just have a calm mind." Then he said, "No." Then he continued to ask, "So is it that you live this holy life, you know, under the blessed one? It's just for the sake of purifications of views under the blessed one?" Then he said, "No." Then he continued to ask, there is the seven stages, you know, from the purifications of virtue, and then purifications of mind, purifications of view, purifications of overcoming doubt, and purifications by knowledge and visions, what is the path and what is not the path, and purifications of purification by knowledge and visions, the way. And the last one is the purifications by knowledge and vision. That is the last stage. And this is the seven stages. So he keep asking him, "You said that you live this holy life is for these stages, you know. So for the first two stages is to cultivate the mind, like the for morality, and then you have the calmness of the mind, you have the develop the mind. Then after that, the last five, you know, stages, that is the cultivation of wisdom, and the last one is the enlightenment." So, and then when Sariputta started to ask him all these questions, you know, that do you live this holy life is just for the sake of being a good person, or you just to purify your views, or you purify your overcoming the doubts, you know, or by visions, knowledge of visions, knowledge and visions, what is the path and what is not the path. And he keep asking him, and he answered, no, this is not the reason I live this holy life." Then the Sariputta started to say, "So how is it possible, you know, you said that, you know, you're not for the, you live the holy life is not for this sake, but how is it possible that you live this holy life to be free from, you know, suffering, to attain enlightenment?" Then he started to ask, and then this Venerable Punya explained to Sariputta, "It's just like that, like the chariots, you know, the relay chariots, that, you know, you got the from one, you start from point A to your destination, so you have to go through all the township, but the whole thing you have to go through, but each one itself is not an end of itself. You know, but it's essential. You need to go through that in order to attain enlightenment. So, for example, we need to have the basic, you know, to have the morality as a foundation. So being a good person will not liberate us, you know. So that is, but it's essential, it's important, but it's not an end of itself. So development of the mind, just being a calm person, so we're still bound by the great hatred and delusion, just be a peaceful person. So itself is not the goal, it's not an end of itself, but we need to have this calm mind. We need to have this to develop the path. Then after that, we have this, develop the purification of the will, that is the right will, that we have the understanding of the cause and effect, that is the law of karma. So if you don't have the right will, if you don't believe the law of karma, then again and again, if you have the wrong will, so that's what you can see in the whole path of practice. You see, you start out with the right will. So we have to have a bit of wisdom, you know, right understanding to start out with. So the end of the path is also wisdom. So the whole path, you know, is to develop the wisdom. So we need the wisdom to break the chain, that the dependent originations, the first one, avijja, ignorant. So the only thing we break through, you know, not to be reborn, you know, in the samsara again, the cycle is to break through the chain, the dependence of these dependent originations, that is a avijja. That's why it's the whole path we develop this wisdom. And that is there's more in detail that how the various purifications, because I just like give you an overview that how is it important that, you know, it's essential we need to develop this. We can't jump the queue, like, you know, we don't have a good we don't live a good life and don't have a virtuous way of living, you know, conduct, and then we think that we can, you know, try to sit on the cushions and try very hard and push and we try to focus, and then we think that we just got enlightened just sitting on the cushion and meditate. We thought that like the Buddha. So, but because the Buddha had been cultivated his goodness from eons lifetime. So that's why when the Buddha's, when he was striving for his enlightenment, when he was under the Bodhi tree, then he was being challenged by, you know, the Mara. The Mara, you know, the last cry that the Mara used is that, what the rights you have sit under this Bodhi tree. You know, the Buddha said, with my development of my goodness, he said, I have been cultivating, you know, this goodness for many eon lifetimes. That he said, he asked the earth to be the witness that my good karma bring me here. My because I've been cultivating, you know, the goodness, you know, bring him here, the wholesome deed that he had done. That's why it's the goodness. That's why sometimes it always is very important to go back to the basic. A lot of people try very hard. They learn all sorts of techniques, you know. Try to, all sorts of meditation techniques. And try to be peaceful. And you can't. If you don't cultivate develop the basic. You need to have the basic. To have the morality as a foundation. So without the foundation, we can't build the building. The building will collapse. It will not stand. Will not be stable. So any questions or comments that... So no questions, no comments? Yeah, it's good that if you have time, if you have the Majjhima Nikaya, so please go back. You can read the Suttas 24. That is the relay chariots. That is very good. That's about the whole path, like, you know, from developing from the base, you know, the seven stages of purifications. There's a whole path of purification. There's like. And naturally, when we purify our mind, and actually, it's naturally, you're kind and compassionate. Yeah, so I think we can finish now. So we pay respect to the Buddha.
Panopana.